Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Welcome, friend. Follow me. We're going somewhere dark, somewhere dangerous. Most people would never dare enter the place we're going. There's no telling what horrors we'll find, what terrors we'll uncover. Don't say I didn't warn you. We might discover terrible monsters lurking there. Be careful, they could follow you out. Or maybe they're already inside you. Are you afraid? Good. Now you are ready to enter the Warning Woods. Darian Whitney clapped his laptop shut and shook his head. He was sitting on the floor of his brother Reese's room with his back against Reese's bed. "Still a no from the hotel?" Reese asked. "A pretty hard one this time," Darian replied. "I don't even know if there's a high enough price we could name to be let into that place." Reese kicked back his gaming chair and let it roll across his room until he bumped against his nightstand. He spun toward Darian and looked down at him. He looked pathetic, wasting there on the floor like that old hotel was the only haunted building left in America. From the looks of it, Darian needed a pick-me-up, and Reese had just the thing. He spun around to the nightstand and retrieved a small camera from the drawer. "Oh, Darian," he teased, pointing the camera at him. "It's not the hotel, but I've got a surprise for you." "It's a barn," Darian said flatly as Reese pulled up in front of a desolate property at the edge of a dying town. Reese had flown him all the way to Oregon, then driven him in the night to a tiny town called Stedman, according to the lopsided sign by the only road in. "Smile, you're on camera," Reese said, aiming his camcorder at Darian's face. Darian said, "Okay, but what is this place? I've never heard of it." "You've never heard of the Foreman Ranch?" Reese sounded positively flabbergasted, astounded at his own brother's ignorance. But it was all an act. He finished with, "Well, I'm not surprised because I hadn't heard of it until we got this letter." He flashed an envelope at Darian, making sure only the backside faced the camera. He didn't want the return address showing up in the video by accident. The last thing the Whitney brothers needed was to be accused of doxing a rare haunted property that didn't have its location seeded all over the internet. "I assume the letter came from here?" Darian asked. He gestured toward the old farmhouse situated between the decrepit barn and the road. The windows had all been smashed in, and the small porch out front had collapsed on itself. There were dark spots on the roof that he guessed were holes. "It's the return address, yeah," Reese said. "I googled it. The county assessor says this place is owned by a bank. I couldn't believe the online records went back this far, but apparently before this place was foreclosed, it was owned by a guy with the last name Foreman. So, naturally, I searched for Foreman, Stedman, Oregon, and wouldn't you know it, a bunch of threads on paranormal and true crime forums popped up." "Did something happen here?" Darian asked. An inkling of frustration wriggled in his chest. He hated being kept in the dark. "Oh yeah. Whether you believe in the paranormal or not, something real messed up definitely happened here." Darian asked, "Are you gonna tell me what?" "Once we're..." Reese paused to flip his camera around to his own face, then dramatically whispered, "Inside." "So what, do we just have to wait out here until the owner or manager or whoever gets us?" "I don't know," Reese said. He seemed very eager to capture every minuscule twitch in Darian's response to his teasing. He knew his brother well enough to know he was getting under his skin, yet he insisted on dragging out the reveal. Darian continued to play it cool for the camera, but inside, he was losing his patience. "Didn't your letter, like, explain anything? Or did it just tell you to show up here in the middle of the night?" "Oh, it said less than that." Reese struggled to open the envelope with one hand, but eventually lifted the torn flap and scooted a single sheet of paper out. He raised it so Darian could read it, zooming in on his dumbstruck expression. After all they had been through together, it was tough for Reese to freak Darian out anymore, but clearly the letter had done the trick. Darian asked, "Is this real? You didn't, like, make this yourself, did you?" With the slowness of a practiced dramatist, Reese turned over the folded sheet of paper, revealing one word scrawled diagonally across in black ink. "Come." He said, "Nope. This really came to me in the mail." "No, no, no," Darian argued. "You did not just drive us out to some nowhere town in the dark because an anonymous person told you to come here. Do you see this place, Reese? This is where we would go if we wanted to get killed by a psycho. Take your pick, barn or condemned house. Which would you rather have your throat slit in?" "Relax, Dee," Reese cooed. "We'll come back in the daylight to check it out. I called the county sheriff's office about it too. They said this place is actually slated for demolition next week and that nobody's staying here. They weren't sure who the letter might have come from, but for all we know, it just came from some fan who'd heard about this place and wants us to investigate it. Good timing too, since it's going to be gone a week from now." "Was the sheriff cool with us looking around?" Darian asked. Reese said, "Better to ask forgiveness than permission. There's a motel up the road. I got us a room there so we can get some sleep and come back when the sun's up. I just have to do one thing first. Film me." After shoving his camera into Darian's hands, Reese abruptly removed his seatbelt, opened his door, and ran around the front of the car. He jogged lightly up to the rotting, split-rail fence lining the front of the property and hopped over a fallen beam. Reese broke into a sprint while Darian watched, filling the car with the smell of his anxious sweat. He trained the camera on his brother, but his eyes scanned everywhere else to make sure nothing and no one else was nearby. Reese tossed something through a broken window on the second floor, then ran back to the car. "What was that? What'd you do?" Darian demanded. Grinning into the camera, Reese replied, "You'll see." They woke early the next morning and hiked their bags of gear back down the road to the Foreman Ranch. Reese had insisted it would be fine to park the car out front, but Darian thought that could attract unwanted attention. Since he was already asking Darian to put up with a lot, Reese surrendered this argument. The rising sun shining directly onto the house's sagging face made it less scary and more depressing to look at. Reese thought it looked symbolic of something he couldn't quite define. The state of rural America, perhaps. "So, are you going to tell me what you tossed in there last night?" Darian asked. This was the first thing either of them had said to each other since leaving the motel. Reese replied, "In good time, good sir. Now let's find a way in." The way in turned out to be through the storm shelter door in the back, since the front door was blocked by the collapsed porch. "Anybody in here?" Reese called in his most authoritative tone after yanking the door open. Somebody had tried attaching a padlock at one point, but time and decay had nullified it. Reese said, "Seems like we're clear." Darian peered down through the door. The concrete stairs below were coated with moss and patches of what looked like black mold. He pulled his shirt up to his eyes and said, "Great, we have to start in the creepy basement?" Reese assured him nothing morbid had occurred in the basement and that, creepy or not, it was probably one of the few spots inside that wouldn't be that haunted. Darian told him that didn't help. The basement had a dirt floor and cement walls dripping with condensation. Old furniture covered in mildew and rot lined each wall and filled every corner. In the center was a wood-burning furnace covered in thick black soot. "All it needs is an empty chair in the middle, and this could be the basement from The Conjuring," Darian said. Reese grinned, finally detecting a hint of excitement in his brother's voice. They went straight through the basement without spending much time examining anything. Upstairs, the boys entered the furnished dining room. It looked like it had not been disturbed since the Foremans had last eaten there. At least there weren't any decades-old dirty dishes soaking in the swampy sink. They passed through an open door into a slightly larger room with a big leather chair and a tiny couch with paper-thin cushions. On the wall hung a dusty photo in a simple wooden frame. Reese approached it curiously and brushed away the thick layer of dust hiding the photo's subjects from the moldy, decaying house. Oh, this is perfect, Reese whispered excitedly. Okay, Dee, get a camera on me. It's time to tell a story. Finally, Darian grunted as he unfolded a tripod he took from his bag. A minute later, with the red circle on the camera's screen flashing, Reese recounted the Foreman family's last night alive. The people in this photo behind me are the Foreman family, he began. They're the last family who lived in this old house because nobody dared move in after what happened here. It all apparently started with rumors about the cows raised here on the Foreman ranch. For some reason, people thought the cows were being affected by the devil. Were they sick or something? Darian interrupted. Nobody knows, and it's been so long that we'll probably never know for sure. But something was definitely wrong here. I couldn't find anything about Bertie Foreman, the mom, acting strange before. Well, before. But something drove her insane enough to kill her entire family, including herself. And she did most of it right here in the house. Reese finished this sentence looking into the camera, but then his eyes met Darian's. Darian, to Reese's surprise, just shrugged. He said, "Hate to be a buzzkill, but I kinda figured people got killed here. I mean, I can feel it. It's got that heavy air." "Don't tell me, tell the people," Reese scolded. "Right," Darian said. He picked up another camera, pointed it at himself, and said, "You can definitely feel something heavy here. It's like, even though the house is falling down, the weight of what happened here..." "I don't know, dude. Just finish the story." "Fine, fine. So, like I was saying, Bertie Foreman, by all accounts, was a normal lady until the night she killed everybody. That night, after everybody else went to sleep, she brought a branding iron from the barn into the house. Then, she used it to cave in her husband's skull. And get this, she did it with one blow." "Brutal," Darian remarked. Reese said, "You know what? Let's finish this upstairs," and headed toward the rickety staircase by the front door. Darian followed, still rolling. "So Bertie would have come up these stairs with the branding iron and gone right in here." Reese pointed to an open door directly across from the top of the stairs. They could see an empty bed frame partially through the doorway, and beneath the bed was a small digital recorder Darian recognized as one of their own. "Is that what you threw in here last night?" he asked. Reese cautiously entered the bedroom and got on his knees to reach under the bed. After retrieving the recorder, he held it up close enough to the camera to make the image lose focus. "We'll talk about this in a minute," he said, "but first, let's take a look at the other bedroom." There was a closed door a short distance from the master bedroom. Reese crept toward it, testing the floor as he went. Darian followed with the camera. Reese said, "So I'm guessing the boys' room is on the other side of this door. According to what I've read, all three of them shared one room, and Bertie killed them one by one in their sleep. Honestly, I'm a little scared to open this door. I have no idea what's going to be on the other side." Reese gripped the brass doorknob, inhaled slowly, and sucked in his lips. After abruptly exhaling, he turned the knob and pushed the door in. The three bed frames inside were also bare, their blood-soaked mattresses having never been replaced. The last time anyone had laid on those beds, they had been murdered. "Hey, what's that?" Darian asked, pointing underneath the furthest bed frame in the back of the room. Reese stooped to investigate. He reached a hand through the frame, then jumped back and gargled a strange cry of surprise and disgust. "Oh my God, that can't be what I think it is," he said. "Give me that." Reese took the camera and zoomed in on the object under the bed. He had to manually focus the lens. When the image finally sharpened, it showed a small piece of metal, smooth and round at one end, and pointed at the other. The whole thing was pockmarked and stained a rusty orange. "How could the police have missed this?" Reese asked rhetorically. "It shouldn't still be here." "Are you going to tell me what it is?" Darian asked impatiently. "Oh yeah, well, the Foreman brand was a big letter F with the middle line, you know, the shorter horizontal one, passing all the way through the back. People think the top line broke off while Birdie was smashing in heads, and I could be wrong, but doesn't that look like a snapped-off piece of iron? One of the stairs groaned behind them. The brothers spun around, and Darian called out, "Who's there?" But no one answered. Reese hurried to the doorway with the camera and showed the empty landing. He panned down the stairs to the living room, which was also empty. "It's an old house," he said. "Who knows the last time somebody came up here? We probably just disturbed it, you know?" "Sure," Darian replied, but he wasn't remotely convinced. "Well, I guess this interruption might be a good chance to go listen to this," Reese said, waving the recorder in front of the camera again. They descended into the living room and set their bags down. The couch's skinny, cream-colored cushions were speckled with black spots, and the leather chair smelled like a hot gym bag, so the brothers sat next to each other on the floor. Reese opened his laptop. He plugged in the recorder, which had run out of battery at some point during the previous night, and imported the long recording. "I'm just looking for some sort of spike or... ah, here we go." Reese pointed to a place where the steady sound profile was disrupted by spiking waves. "I bet this is it." He maxed out the volume on his laptop, selected the wavy section of audio, then hit play. White noise filled the first handful of seconds, just the room's natural ambience. Then, a bird-like chirp spiked the volume. The boys recognized the sound from the staircase they had just reversed. Each spike in the audio was a creaking footstep. Darian wanted to ask Reese if someone else had been inside the house the previous night, but suppressed his curiosity while he listened. The last creaking board sounded close to the recorder. Whoever had stepped on it was standing right next to the bed. The boys waited while the media player scrolled closer and closer to an enormous sound wave. It turned out to be a soft, bassy impact with overtones of a crunching apple. Reese and Darian looked at each other, open-mouthed. Another creak met the microphone. It sounded further away than the last. "Skip ahead to that," Darian said, pointing to a small mountain range approaching on the audio track. Reese skipped ahead. The first sound was a more muted version of the big one from before. The second, a near copy of the first. The third sound made Reese jump and Darian secretly think of running out the door. It was not a muffled impact, but a young man's panicked scream. The fourth sound matched the first two, and then there were no more. The boys skipped way ahead and heard more bumps and creaks, but none as defined or violent as the undeniable time-traveling echo of the Foreman murders. "How do you explain that?" Reese asked. Darian turned to reply but saw his brother was looking at the camera, not him. Still addressing the audience, Reese said, "So I think it's safe to say the ghost of Birdie Foreman is still in the house. But there's another spirit supposedly haunting this property. Dee, you want to guess what it is?" "No." Reese could tell his brother was starting to get really frustrated and quickly brushed his dry response aside. "Supposedly, the very demon which possessed Birdie Foreman to kill her family is still lurking in the barn to this day. So we're going to do a double investigation tonight. We're going to have cameras and ghost hunting equipment set up in the house and the barn and..." "Wait, we're not going to split up, are we?" Darian asked. Reese gave him a reassuring smile. "No, no, I'm not that crazy. Anytime there's a demon around, I think we need to play it safe." The boys left the house to go check out the barn in daylight. They decided not to film, since they planned on coming back that night when it would look way creepier on camera. This visit was only for them, just to see what they were dealing with. Similar to the locks on the house, the lock on the barn had fallen or been broken away. The sliding double doors were rotted all the way through and felt like sponges when Darian and Reese pushed on them. The doors jerked and groaned, but with patient effort, the boys were able to part them enough to slip through. Oof, maybe we should have brought cameras, Rhys said upon seeing the inside of the barn. Angelic streams of sunlight shone like spotlights through the holes in the roof. They lit up patches of hay-strewn concrete and a couple of stables. Outside of those small heavenly beams, the rest of the barn was shrouded in dense shadows. Darian immediately felt uncomfortable inside. Rhys mumbled, "Bummer." "What, not creepy enough for you?" Darian asked. "Nah, it's creepy for sure. It's just... somebody online said the hooks Birdie hung her family on were still here."
"She did what?"
"Yeah, they said the meat grinder was still in here too, and that it still had Birdie's blood all over it. I thought that seemed unlikely."
Hold on. What the hell happened in here?" Darian asked hesitantly.
He made himself small and watched the shadows. He felt like they were eyeing him, as if the shadows themselves were sentient. Rhys explained, "After the murders, Birdie dragged her family out here, burned their mouths shut with the branding iron, which looked like an upside-down cross with that piece broken off, and hung them all on a row of meat hooks."
"Jeez," Darian recoiled.
"Oh, it gets much worse," said Rhys. "This is the main reason people think she was possessed by a demon or something. When she finished hanging them all up, she put her own head in a meat grinder and cranked it until her skull was crushed. When some concerned neighbors came by to check on the family, they found Birdie still dangling from that machine."
"Let's get out of here," Darian said. "I feel sick, and I don't think it's just from that story."
Rhys agreed. He felt a little nauseous too. The heaviness from the house was also present in the barn, but there was something more. The barn felt like a superconductor funneling every form of negative energy through it. An invisible river of evil flowed gently but dizzyingly by, trying to pull them deeper. They decided to go back to the motel to plan their video and wait for night to fall.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
The boys left the motel at sunset so they wouldn't have to walk the whole way to the Foreman Ranch in the dark. Darian suggested they set up a camera in the barn first, before they lost all light. Rhys agreed. He also placed a REM pod, a device which winds and lights up if someone or something goes near it, across from the camera, so that even if nothing visibly appeared, they would know it was there. Once these tasks were complete, the brothers also set up a camera and REM pod duo in the master bedroom and the boys' bedroom. They had each camera wirelessly connected to a hub with a screen which allowed them to watch all three locations at once. Rhys explained why while Darian filmed on his phone. First, Rhys told their viewers the rest of the story, including the gory post-murder details from the barn. Then he said, "We're going to watch the cameras remotely tonight. This is a unique situation. According to the online lore, an ethereal echo of that night replays here every night. If that's the case, we want to observe it and not get in the way. We want to have it recorded for all time, since this place is slated to get demolished next week. Plus, this way we don't have to spend the night in a barn with a demon," Darian said cheerily. His whole disposition had improved since they had gone back to the motel. Having time to process had allowed him to get excited about their investigation. Now that he knew everything Rhys knew, he was equally enthralled. "We're just going to sit down here and watch the cameras from this," Darian held up the hub, showing the triple display. "And, well,
I guess we'll just go from there. While they waited for something to happen, the boys ate snacks, watched shows on their phones, and occasionally talked. Darian wished they had brought some beers to help with the boredom. The longer they sat in the living room, the less creepy the crumbling house felt. The moldy corners and warped floorboards were less unsettling the longer he looked at them. "It's like immersion therapy," he said to Reese at one point. "If nothing happens soon, I might actually be able to fall asleep on that nasty old couch." The boys were discussing one of their sponsors when Reese suddenly raised a finger in Darian's face and said, "Shh, did you hear that?" Darian hadn't heard anything. Reese said, "Quick, grab your phone." Darian did as his brother asked, glancing at the hub before Reese picked it up. Nothing was happening on screen. Darian pointed his phone at Reese and told him it was recording. "Okay, guys, it's about 11 at night, and I'm pretty sure I just heard, like, mattress springs or something upstairs. Darian and I were talking, so I didn't really..." The whine of a REM pod cut him off. Reese could hear it going off upstairs, looked to the hub, and saw the pod's flashing lights in the master bedroom. Then it stopped. Up at the top of the stairs, a floorboard groaned. "Get behind the couch," Reese whispered urgently. If the events of that long ago night were replaying, the ghost of Bertie Foreman was about to walk down the stairs and pass right by them. Darian pointed his phone around the couch at the stairs. Together, huddled behind the couch, the boys watched the phone's screen. The stairs sounded off one at a time. A smell descended with the footsteps, a lip-curling stench which the brothers recognized from the barn. Barns always have a musty, mildewy scent, so they hadn't thought anything of it when they had been out there. But here, in the living room, it made no sense. The footsteps paused at the base of the stairs. Nothing appeared on camera. Reese had read an account of someone actually seeing the full-body apparition of Bertie Foreman before, and he struggled to resist the temptation to peek. He had to remind himself not to interfere with the echo. Enough time passed to make the boys wonder if Bertie, if that's who had been on the stairs, was gone. They watched the hub screen intently and listened for any more footsteps. None came. Then, seemingly for no reason, the camera in the barn tipped over. It landed hard, vibrating violently. It went out of focus for about 5 seconds, during which a bright light lit up in front of it. "That's the REM pod," Reese whispered, turning up the hub's volume so they could hear its eerie whine. "Should we go out there?" Darian asked. Reese looked confused. He said, "Hold up, there's something else there." The fallen camera was lilting in and out of focus. At first, Reese thought it had been damaged in the fall and possibly needed repair. But then he noticed a hazy object dangling in the middle of the picture and realized the camera's autofocus was trying to zero in on it. When the image finally stabilized, the boys both saw what the camera had been trying to show them. A row of broad hooks swaying in the dark. Darian asked the big question. "What knocked over the camera?" Reese said, "Remember how the barn felt earlier? Like it was, I don't know, pulling us in deeper," Darian finished. They had not really discussed how the barn made them feel beyond the nausea it had induced in them both. Hearing his brother so simply and accurately describe the tugging sensation that he had felt made Reese's skin crawl. He said, "Yeah, pulling us. I wonder if maybe that current or whatever it was got strong enough to knock over the tripod." As he spoke, he stared at the swaying meat hooks on the screen. Darian suddenly remembered they were trying to make a video for YouTube. He asked Reese to record him, then gave a quick rundown of everything that had happened, was currently happening, and what he thought could happen. He described the flowing river of negativity and speculated on what it could mean. "I have to wonder," he said, looking to Reese for validation, "if the demonic presence that supposedly made everything happen here is still out in that barn. And if it is, What's it doing? What does it want? You're gonna hate me for saying this, said Reese, but I think we should go out there and check it out. Darian nodded with an expression that was supposed to look somber, but only made him look like a scared child in a dentist's waiting room. He said, Yeah, unfortunately, I think you're right. But we can't interact with it at all, okay? We can't give it a chance to, you know. Possess us? Reese asked. Darian cast his eyes downward, sucked in his upper lip, and nodded. The storm shelter door thudded loudly as Darian let it drop behind him. Reese glared a stern warning. The two crouched low and snuck into the yard, watching the barn carefully as they approached it. Reese was still carrying the video hub, and Darian had his phone out. A dozen yards behind them, the storm shelter door thudded again. Both boys flinched and spun to look. The space between them and the house appeared empty, but they both had a sense that their eyes might be deceiving them. Or that, perhaps, whatever was in the empty space behind them existed on a plane of which their senses had no awareness. Look there, Darian hissed. He pointed the camera directly at a window on the ground floor. Reese strained to make anything out. The house was too dark to see inside, until she moved. Reese made a strangled gasp as he saw the suddenly obvious visage of a pale woman shift on the other side of the glass. She turned slightly and vanished into the darkness. That was her. She was so clear. Please tell me you got that on camera, whispered Reese. Darian said, We'll have to check later, but I don't think she showed up on the screen. Should we go back in? Reese asked. Darian replied, I feel like we need to focus on the barn. Birdie's just an echo. Whatever's in the barn is conscious. At least that's how it feels to me. Prior to an earlier incident in their ghost hunting career, Reese probably would have thought Darian was joking. But ever since a desperate spirit named Vivian had temporarily taken over Darian's body, he had possessed a new sensitivity to the spirit world. It was like a small piece of him had been left over there, and it signaled to him from time to time. He did not consider himself a medium or psychic. He couldn't speak with the dead or make any predictions, but he could sometimes sense presences, both physical and spiritual, when he couldn't see anyone around. The clearest, if silliest, example of this ability manifested whenever he would approach a public restroom and knew without checking the handle whether or not it was occupied. But his real gift was sensing presences on the other side. He didn't have his ability fully under control, at least not yet, but it still came in handy from time to time. Reese said, The barn it is. They approached the crumbling barn from the side rather than the front this time. There were holes all over the walls that would allow them to see in. Various sounds escaped from the barn with enough volume to move the audio meters on Darian's camera. This excited him because it meant the inexplicable sounds were being recorded. Reese still had his eyes inside the barn thanks to the hub. He showed Darian that the barn was still empty, save for the lilting hooks and sporadically activating REM pod. Probably just more echoes, Darian said. But he was not as confident as he made himself sound. They found a large hole which Darian could peek through with both his eyes and his phone. Reese kept an eye on the inside camera while Darian scoped out new angles of the barn. There's something else in there I didn't notice before, Darian said. It's like a machine. It's all rusted and... Oh, God. Oh, I know what it is. He spared a glance over his shoulder as he said, It has a hand crank. Okay, we definitely would have noticed if the meat grinder was still in there earlier, Reese said. Darian flinched away from the hole and took a few sharp breaths. His eyes were rounded in wide circles. He said, Dude, I've never seen anything like this before. I don't even know how to capture it for the video. How come? Reese asked. Take a look through this hole. Look to the left. Reese looked. He saw the meat grinder centered in an uneven rectangle of moonlight.
He stood by his statement that they would have noticed the large and infamous machine.
"Now look at my phone," Darian said.
Rhys looked down.
Darian had his phone pointed to where the meat grinder sat, but on the screen, there was no meat grinder, only an empty, bluish-white space.
Darian pointed the phone at himself and said,
"I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. You saw it, right?" he asked Rhys.
"Yeah. Yeah, we can both see the meat grinder with our eyes, but it's not showing up on the camera at all."
"Can you see the hooks?" Rhys asked.
Darian pointed his phone to where the hooks were hanging.
"Nothing."
"Wait, they're gone here too," Rhys said.
Every hook had vanished from the video hub screen. Also, the REM pod had gone dark and quiet.
"Okay, I think I've changed my mind," said Darian. "I don't want to be anywhere near this thing. I definitely think it's demonic, and I'm getting a really strong feeling that it's messing with us on purpose. I think it wants attention, and it's trying to, I don't know, draw us in."
"Okay, all right,"
Rhys swallowed. He wasn't sure he had ever felt this kind of fear before in his life. He had been terrified when Vivian had possessed Darian, but then he had been scared for his brother's life. Now he was scared for not just their lives, but their souls. They had dealt with so-called demons before, but never anything that could manipulate their sight. Never anything that had a presence so heavily oppressive that he, not just Darian, could feel it. He said, "I'm gonna go in there and grab the camera. I'll just leave the REM pod. We can replace that, but the footage on the camera is irreplaceable. Not to mention, I don't really want to spend everything we make on this video on a new camera."
"Yeah," Darian agreed.
"But be quick, okay? I'll stay out here so I can get help if we need it." They crept to the front of the barn. Rhys handed the video hub to Darian and told him to keep an eye on it. Darian pocketed his phone to free up his hands.
"Okay.
In and out," said Rhys. He took a deep breath and stared through the small space between the rotting doors. Hesitantly, he and Darian each grabbed a door and pulled. The doors exploded sideways and the Whitney brothers stood frozen, face to mangled face with the ghost of Birdie Foreman. Her jaw had been torn away along with much of her scalp, one of her ears, and the skin surrounding one eye socket. She howled at them like a threatened wolf, then rocketed backwards. She disappeared behind a row of shadowy figures hanging from long chains. From deep in the barn, the sound of a grating crank screeched at them, accompanied by spongy, wet crunches. The REM pod went absolutely haywire.
"Run! Run now!" Darian yelled.
He sprinted, not aiming for the house, but the empty field next to the property. He wanted to get off the Foreman ranch as fast as humanly possible. He spared a glance backward and saw Rhys was still in front of the barn. He yelled his brother's name, but Rhys only responded by raising a finger, signaling Darian to wait. But Darian knew they couldn't wait. The malevolent spirit haunting that barn wanted them, or at least one of them, and Rhys needed to get the hell away from it.
"Come on," Darian screamed as he doubled back for Rhys, terrified that his brother might have already been possessed.
"I gotta get it," Rhys called back, talking about the camera. Ducking down for some reason, he scrambled into the barn. Darian charged forward. The whole thing felt like a trap, but it did all make sense now. Awful sense. The demon had allowed enough to appear on that camera to make it indispensable to them, to make them need to retrieve it. The camera was a lure, and Rhys was going right to it, endangering himself and forcing Darian to go in after him. He had to, right? After all, Rhys had gone after him once and had nearly been shot in the process. Darian could only make out silhouettes in the shadows. He watched Rhys crouch and reach for the camera. Its screen lit him up faintly. The ambient moonlight showed a second figure, a woman standing above him, and she had something raised above her head. As the shadowy woman brought her arms down, Darian reached out and tugged at Rhys, pulling himself down too.
A metallic clank pierced their ears as the brothers scrambled to their feet. "Go, go, I've got it," Reese panted. Darian ran out right beside him. They ran all the way to the road, and only then felt safe enough to slow down. "What about everything we left in the house?" Darian asked. They talked and decided it would be best to return at dawn to collect their gear. Hopefully, the ethereal rerun of the demonically influenced murder-suicide would be over by then. So we got all our gear back except the REM pod in the barn and made it home safe. We've met with both a shaman and a priest for cleansing and stuff, and I think we're okay, Reese said in the video's conclusion. Darian said, "We'll let you guys know if anything changes, but yeah, that was seriously the craziest night of my life. You guys just watched our footage. You saw those hooks appear and disappear. You heard us reacting to things that weren't there. Reese, I wish you guys could have been there to see what we saw, though." Darian, "I don't." They both laughed. Darian, "That's the end of this one, folks. But real quick, and I know this is a long shot, we've been trying to get a hold of someone at the Hotel Moss in New York. We're having a really hard time getting permission to do an investigation there. If anybody watching this has a hookup, let us know. Otherwise, we'll talk to you next time." Closing her laptop, the woman pulled out her phone. She made a couple of calls, sent a few texts, and finally called the number she acquired through one of her inquiries. Darian Whitney did not pick up her call, not that she had expected him to. A big YouTube star like him probably got spam calls all the time. She was not discouraged and left him a simple voicemail. "Hello, Darian. I might be the person you're looking for. I don't have a connection at the Hotel Moss per se, but I have some credibility that might lend a hand in getting you access. You can call me back at this number, or text if you prefer. My name is Professor Gabby Pons, and I'm looking forward to hearing back from you." You made it out. Congratulations. If you enjoyed the story, please rate and review this podcast wherever you like to listen. Reviews are the best way to support the podcast and help it grow. If you want more creepy content, follow me on Instagram at The Warning Woods. If you feel ready, meet me here next week for another journey into The Warning Woods. Thank you for listening.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.